to the fourth case for this morning, Story against Randy's Auto Sales. Mr. Stoddard.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mitch Stoddard of St. Louis for the appellant, Larry Story. The purpose of the Indiana salvage title laws is to alert downstream purchasers to the fact that a vehicle is a salvage vehicle, it's been wrecked, or severely damaged, so that they can enter into the transaction with their eyes wide open.
I had two questions for you, Mr. Stoddard, just to put them on the table. One of them that your opponents raise is, you know, that may be true for ordinary purchasers who are obtaining certificates of title, but does this apply to registered dealers? And my second question actually is a jurisdictional question. I've been worrying about whether the amount of controversy is met here, given the fact that your client seems to have gotten 200,000 some odd miles of use out of this tractor.
Well, tell me one more time the first question.
This one is, as a matter of understanding the Indiana statutes, and let's assume for the sake of argument right now that we're correctly applying Indiana law, not Tennessee law, not somebody else's law, but if it's Indiana law, the argument's made that dealers don't have to obtain a certificate of title as they're moving vehicles down the chain because of their special status as dealers.
Yes, thank you for explaining that, Your Honor. I think the statute's clear, and we're talking about 9-22-3-11E, which applies to any other person. And there's no exception made for dealers. Any other person who acquires a salvage vehicle, and we get the benefit of the doubt on appeal, this is a salvage vehicle.
So do we have to read this statute then? Because, of course, this particular truck moves down several chains. So you don't have to apply to the Bureau after receipt of the certificate of title if there already is a salvage title.
Correct.
So had the insurance company, let's say, taken this to Indiana and gotten a salvage title, or if Tennessee required salvage titles for vehicles above 9,000 pounds or something like that, then nobody else would ever have to worry about it.
Exactly. And what would happen is a large brand called Salvage Title, that actual large prominent words would appear on both the front and the back as required by law. So when that title got transferred, in this case, to Randy's, and then to Westside Auto, and then to the dealer in Farmington. When that dealer then rebuilt the truck and sold it to my client's going to see salvage title right on that title, and he's either going to pay less for it, he's going to walk away from the whole transaction.
But, you know, it seems like he was paying less for it. I guess I saw it someplace in the briefs that he was shopping around, and this was actually an extraordinarily low price for this kind of tractor, given the very, very low mileage.
It certainly wasn't a low price, given the fact that it had been damaged. But with respect to any discount based on full fair market value, it was pretty close. I think that the testimony that came out in his deposition was a vehicle like that was maybe $100,000 in that range. It was a used vehicle. It wasn't brand new. So there would be some discount for the fact that there were 24,000 miles. Now, 24,000 miles is not a lot for a vehicle that can easily travel a million miles. But it was a used vehicle. He asked questions about it. He got an explanation, and that explanation did not include the fact that the vehicle had been totally wrecked, resulting in the death of the driver.
Now, can you explain to me why this Tennessee certificate of title checks new and doesn't have an odometer reading on it?
I've never looked at that issue, and I'm not sure what the requirements are in Tennessee for applying for a title. I mean,
I'd be very disinclined to buy a vehicle in Tennessee, but I don't know whether that means anything.
I agree with that, Judge. But, I mean, the original title, I believe, was New York, and then St. Paul did apply for a Tennessee title. At that point, it certainly should have said used. That's just never been an issue that's come up. I haven't looked at that, Judge.
The problem I have with your interpretation of the Indiana statute, this subsection E that is in play here, is that it's asking Randy's Auto Sales, to do something that's impossible, which is apply for title when it's not the owner of the vehicle.
But there's no requirement, Judge, of ownership in the statute. The trigger language is acquire. Randy's has to acquire the vehicle, and then they become obligated to apply for a salvage title within 31 days after receiving the certificate of title.
Acquire refer to possession or to ownership or what?
It uses the word acquire. And
what does that mean? Question.
Well, first off, I think there's a difference between acquire and own.
Why don't you take a more straightforward approach and just say, if this statute applies, you shouldn't sell it until you get the salvage title? I mean, it was their own action that made it impossible for them to, under their interpretation.
I don't disagree with that at all, but the statute doesn't prohibit them from selling it.
Sell a vehicle, you have to transfer the certificate of title. That's why I asked you about dealers, because apparently dealers follow up with the certificate of title sometimes.
Well, yes, and some states actually prohibit that and require transfer of title at the same time as the sale. But Indiana, I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, if this statute has that kind of special rule for salvage title vehicles, then it would be within the power of anyone who was so inclined to comply with the statute. Right? Just don't sell it until you get the new title.
I think that is probably more of a common sense approach, but I don't think it's mandated by the statute.
I think the statute says you can acquire it, whatever that word means, purchase it, perhaps, you know, take it, sell it, and then when you don't own it, you can nonetheless submit the certificate of title to the Indiana authorities and get a new salvage title.
See, that's exactly how I interpret the statute. I mean, there's not a whole lot of people or businesses out there that would want to purchase a vehicle, any vehicle, salvage or otherwise.
Now, the Missouri federal court used a different analysis. And why shouldn't the Indiana court follow the Missouri court?
Because it was wrong.
Right or wrong, aren't we just confusing
because that
coming out with these different
analysis? Absolutely, because that analysis did not hold up either. And the analysis of the Missouri court was, this is a Tennessee title. Tennessee law applies. Well, actually, the district court says, no, Indiana law applies. But we think Indiana would apply Tennessee law. So under Tennessee law, they don't have to apply for a salvage title. And the Indiana court obviously didn't want to go there at all.
Well, it didn't. But my question is, aren't we just confusing the law a little bit more by coming out differently here?
I would imagine if the Indiana District Court saw merit in that argument that it would have used it first and forefront. I know my opponent did in his brief, but the Indiana District Court did not see fit. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Palmer.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Jonathan Palmer.
If these federal courts are thrashing around about the meaning of this Indiana statute, why shouldn't we grant the motion for certification that your opponents have put before us?
I think this happens
a lot, major motor vehicle sales.
I think that Indiana law is pretty clear on this. We have the Madrid case. We have, to answer the question, what does acquire mean? We have the Allstate versus Larkin's body
problem with your
case.
Position. My plain language problem with your position is that as I look at the statute that governs, it says you shall apply to the Bureau within 31 days after receipt of the certificate of title. It doesn't say after you acquire it. It doesn't say after you sell it. It identifies a moment, which is the moment when you receive the certificate of title. It uses mandatory language. And you know, it's not up to us to write Indiana statutes. If that's what the Indiana legislature wanted for this, then isn't it up to us to respect that? And if that part's not clear, if we see some tension between this acquiring language and the after receipt language, then why isn't it Indiana's job to give an authoritative ruling?
Judge Lawrence noted that policy challenge in his footnote. He said, if it's not in the statute, it's not up to us to infer that it should be in the statute. If there's some loophole in the law, then so be it. It's up to the legislature to fix it. The idea that there's this tension between all of these players, I think, it is very clear in the fact that we have all these states involved. You have Minnesota, Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana, and the UCC answers that for us.
But I'm just looking at this statute, and if it applies to any other person who acquires a wrecked or damaged vehicle, and it says you shall apply to the Bureau within 31 days after receipt, how do we read that to say, well, actually, you don't really have to apply to the Bureau?
Well, I think it goes back to your first question to Mr. Stoddard, and that is, this is a dealer. A dealer has the opportunity to
and
transfer.
And where does Indiana law cite me a statute that says, Indiana says that dealers have no obligation to comply with 922.311 now?
I make the analogy in my brief that there are several things in the regulations that say you must do this thing when you go out and buy a new car. You must go out and get your new title immediately. But, again, that doesn't apply to dealers.
But give me a statute or maybe an Indiana Supreme Court opinion.
In my brief, I do cite some regulations and statutes, including the right of a dealer to transfer an out-of-state title, a salvage title. They have these right to transfer these things by just assigning them on the back.
But why does that exempt a dealer from the duty, or whoever has it? If somebody else has already gotten the salvage title, it's obvious that you don't need to apply for one because there is one.
And the
so
district court
had gotten a salvage title, as I said, hypothetically, you know, if Tennessee had different rules or something.
The district court in Missouri looks at that issue, and they say the law presumes that there's this other existing salvage title. When it starts talking about what dealers' obligations might be vis-a-vis Tennessee versus in Indiana. But I think it goes back to the UCC. The UCC, and again, the Missouri District Court recognizes this, says that the UCC...
Well, they bent the UCC a little bit to accommodate the result.
Well, they note that in their advisory thoughts, but Judge Lawrence also cites the UCC.
Well,
says,
did Randy's know this was a wrecked vehicle? I mean,
Well, here's what. The vehicle was sitting on his lot, and... So, yeah, he knew the condition of it, but he never had to make any analysis. Do I have to go apply for some salvage title?
Maybe
in fact, he thought he was getting
it. The policy of Indiana is that the most important thing is to get this thing classified as a wrecked vehicle. So we're just going to make this a very, very far-reaching requirement. And even though Randy's only had the thing for, what, 8 days?
Yes.
You've got to do the job if nobody else would do it.
Well, and I think
that seems to be their policy.
I think that's what you're asking. You're asking the Indiana dealer or Indiana consumer even to say we cannot trust an out-of-state title. Whatever it is, we have to go back to that state. We have to make further inquiry. And the UCC really says the titling state's law controls. That's what's controlling here. And Judge Lawrence noted the UCC. He noted the Madrid case and says this is not, this whole certificate of title issue is a registration issue. It's not about ownership. And the whole issue of acquired back in this Allstate versus Larkins case, that That was discussed at length as to what it means, and it means ownership and possession. And by the time, you know, the title ever shows up, there's no longer ownership. There's no longer possession.
Their own action, though, I'm really not sympathetic to that. If they knew under this statute that they had to get the salvage title, it just wouldn't be saleable for a few extra days.
How would they know that? Because here, the insurance companies are the gatekeepers throughout the country. These laws are modeled on some federal laws and guidelines and directives. The insurance companies are the gatekeepers. They make the decision. My client daily is in contact with insurance companies. He buys these vehicles. They come in, and he doesn't know what title he's necessarily even going to receive with them. The letter we received from the insurance company, St. Paul's, says, here is your salvage title, which means here is the next title in line, because this is what Tennessee had.
So was St. Paul lying to to people further up the chain?
I don't know. I mean, the vehicle was not damaged to the extent that a salvage title was required.
Well, St. Paul said it was. I mean, so somewhere there's something strange about it.
Well, you can do the math and figure it out, and I do that in my brief, and you find out.
I'm worried about jurisdictional amount, to tell you the truth.
I brought this up in my original motion to dismiss at the court. I brought it up in my summary judgment motion. I keep saying, where is the limit in question here? And Mr. Stoddard's reply on behalf of his client is, well, we have, you know, treble damages or something that we're trying to obtain.
Well, we still need to know what the base is before we know if three times that number equals more than $75,000. Anyway, I know that was explored in the court below, so I think there's a record on that.
We're kind of off point here a little bit when we focus
on. If there's no jurisdiction, we're not off point.
I agree. I was going back to suggest about Indiana salvage laws. There isn't any court that's ever. I mean, and Judge Lawrence looks at that initially and says, "Well, we have this law," but I think he's also saying we have this Tennessee law.
A lot of regulatory laws don't follow normal conflict of laws principle in the sense that if a state has a law for the protection of consumers or for the protection of businesses, it's not going to say, well, we're actually only going to protect those consumers in Indiana who are lucky enough to start out with an Indiana title, and if you happen to have a Tennessee title, tough luck to you. I mean, states normally expect that those kinds of laws need to be complied with, period. As long as you're selling the vehicle in the state of Indiana, you have to comply with the Indiana law.
And I think that the response that Mr. Stoddard has is we're going to throw out Indiana law, we're going to throw out the case law, we're going to throw out the Tennessee title, we're going to throw it all out. And the practical answer is the insurance companies are the gatekeepers. These titles move through the system. Dealers, consumers
some
are
them,
not.
Some of them are wrong, apparently. Some of them are fraudulent.
They possibly could be.
You know.
Well, this one isn't fraudulent. It was issued under Tennessee law.
That Tennessee title looks fraudulent to me. There's no odometer meeting. It calls it new. It doesn't say anything about I mean, it's a terrible. It's very uninformative, I'll say that, about the vehicle. It gives the VIN.
I want to thank you for your time today and ask that the
very much
district court opinion be upheld.
Sure.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Stoddard?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I did not address your second question, which has to do with
jurisdictional amount.
Jurisdiction
yes.
For diversity. We're claiming the represented value of the vehicle was the offering price, right around
$90,000. $1,500.
We have an expert witness who's appraised the vehicle, and he has given us a figure of, I believe, $40,000. To be the actual value on the date of sale. So you take the difference, which would be $50,000. We're entitled to treble damages under the statute, plus my client is also seeking lost wages. It's a commercial vehicle. He was trying to start his own business. And I don't have that figure handy, but I think it's around $30,000.
So what are we supposed to do with the fact that whatever your expert said about it being $40,000, he actually drives it for 200,000 miles? He gets a lot of use out of it.
He does, but that doesn't mean it wasn't wrecked, and it doesn't mean that it still wasn't a dangerous vehicle to some extent. I would say the way that we treat that is, to the extent there was value gained out of the usage, that could be deducted from his actual damages. But it you know,
why
even
wouldn't it be deducted from the, or why wouldn't it be a factor to assess whether that evaluation from the expert was correct or not?
I
mean, maybe it was a $70,000 vehicle, in which case the difference is less. It's about $20,000, so trebled 60 and not enough.
I would say that's an issue of fact. I would say that that is something that would probably have to be decided by a jury. But I think that as long as our allegation is reasonable and was accepted by the district court, you know, I think that that gets factored into the diversity issue.
Okay.
And you did point out, Judge, we are asking the court to certify this to the Indiana Supreme Court. This is clearly a state law question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, both counsel. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.